The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I am Avra Lewis with the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine. The first article is titled, The Queens of Queen Sugar. After Ava DuVernay signed on to direct OWN's TV adaptation of Natalie Barzilli's book in 2016, she brought a crew of Black women into the fold with her. When Queen Sugar debuted 6 years ago, women directed 17% of all episodes of TV shows, according to the Directors Guild of America's Episodic Television Diversity Report. Coming from the world of film, where the numbers were equally dire, director Ava DuVernay flipped more than one script with the OWN series, which became one of the first TV shows to use female directors for every episode. Since 2016, she's hired 42 women directors. More than half have been women of color, and 39 have been first-time scripted television directors in the U.S. Ava opened the door, the back door, the side door, and every single window in the house, says Sierra Glaudy, who made her directorial debut in season 5 of Queen Sugar. She really just took everything off the hinges and said, hey, we're here, and it's a bunch of us, and we're good, so get hip. Glaudy worked as a production assistant on Selma prior to DuVernay offering her a job on a CBS pilot. One semester before graduation, she dropped out of school and moved to New York City from Alabama, which she says mortified her future boss. While waiting for the pilot to get picked up, Glaudy continued chasing her dreams, eventually landing her jobs on Will Packer's box office hit Girls Trip and Lena Waithe's 20s. Then she found herself in the director's chair. Line producer Cheryl Miller's career in TV began more than 40 years ago. When I started out as a production coordinator, there were two or three coordinators nationwide that were of color, she recalls. There were not a lot of people who looked like me in the room. Now she's a part of a crew largely comprised of Black women who are leading behind the scenes. Casting director Aisha Coley, set decorator Kelly Turner, costume designer Christian Chanel Turner, hair department head Nakoya Yancey, and makeup department head Laletta Littlejohn. It's rewarding to work in such an environment at this stage in her career, says Miller. You don't think it will ever happen. So to see people being given opportunities who were not given a chance before is heartwarming. What's happening on Queen Sugar sets an example for the industry at large. While the DGAS's 2019-2020 report found that the number of TV episodes directed by women has doubled since 2016. UCLA's Hollywood Diversity Report 2020, A Tale of Two Hollywoods, found that people of color remain underrepresented as show creators, writers, directors, acting leads, and network heads. I have to hope that this is the new norm, says Michelle of the precedent Queen Sugar has set. Michelle has served as the show's music composer since its inception, and she believes there is a new awareness now of the importance of letting Black women tell stories, work, and have a seat at the table. 6 seasons in, and with new episodes premiering September 7th, it is undeniable that Queen Sugar has a recipe that works. Now you see what you've been missing, says Lottie, whose fellow show directors like Cheryl and Victoria have gone on to direct for David Makes Man and Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker. The industry was bland and unseasoned for so long, and black women came in and all the seasonings in the world and made good stuff. The next article is titled Beyond the Big Screen. As the Academy Museum of Motion Pictures opens its doors, the craft of filmmaking is the star of the show. Hollywood is synonymous with movies, so it is only fitting that it should have a place for fans to gather and marvel at the magic of cinema. After a few false starts due to the pandemic, the Academy Museum of Motion Pictures will officially open its doors on September 30th. It is a day that Jacqueline Stewart, Chief Artistic and Programming Officer, has been working towards since she stepped into her new role last January. Her mission? To demystify filmmaking as a craft. When people think of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, they often think of the Oscars, the world of stars and glamour, says Stewart, a film scholar who previously served as a professor of cinema and media studies at the University of Chicago. I'm very excited that the Academy Museum involves all branches of the Academy, including actors and directors, writers, production designers, costume designers, location managers, hair and makeup artists, and editors. When visitors walk through our galleries, they'll see people who have all kinds of interest and expertise. Located in the Miracle Mile section of Los Angeles, the Academy Museum's 7 floors include spaces for exhibitions and education, plus a cafe, a gift shop, and 2 theaters named for legendary producer David and theater owner Ted Mann. Combined, the theaters seat 1,288 guests. With exhibits and year-round screenings, as well as workshops on filmmaking and film history, the museum is the largest of all its kind dedicated to the medium. And while all are welcome, there's one group in particular whose attention Stewart wants to capture. We want to inspire young people and expose them to the artistic power of film and the many paths that lead into storytelling beyond being a movie star. Featured among the galleries and exhibitions are the works and memorabilia of film pioneers and those who inspired them, from Paul Robeson and Oscar Michaud to Spike Lee, Ruth E. Carter, Haley Orson Welles, and Evelyn Prie. These are also costumes from the classics, including the striped suit that Diana Ross wore in Lady Sings the Blues, and the legendary beaded dress donned by Mabel King as Evelyn in The Wiz. An array of Oscar statues are on display too, dating back to the first year of the Academy Awards and leading up to the present day. Beyond offering opportunities to explore, enjoy, and learn, the Academy Museum is designed to be an inclusive environment. My hope is to open up an understanding of the wide range of people who have contributed to but not been included in traditional film history, like women, people of color, and queer people, says Stewart. We are committed to demonstrating the wide spectrum of perspectives that have cultivated the industry and independent filmmaking all over the world. The next article is titled Editor's Picks: Katori Hall plus Tina Turner equals Kismet. Tina Turner has played an influential role in fellow Tennessee native Katori Hall's life. The playwright's mother loved the performer so much, she named the Tony-nominated writer and executive producer's eldest sister Tina. She, when asked how the opportunity to write the book for the jukebox musical Tina fell in her lap, Paul says it was kismet. Tina first debuted on Broadway in 2019, but had to shut down due to COVID-19. On October 8th, the show is scheduled to reopen at Lutefontein, the theater with Adrienne Warren as the lead. The play, Paul says, is an honest, gritty portrayal of Tina Turner's life as a human being and as a woman, citing the Me Too movement and racial reckonings as catalysts for the resurgence of interest in Turner, Hall adds. It feels so organic that these collisions we would look to a black woman who was such a pioneer and pushed us forward in ways beyond music. Black Girl Joy. From a book to a Broadway musical, these offerings remind us of our beautiful complexity and capacity for fun. Hashtag carefree black off. In 2013, culture critic Ziba Blay turned hashtag carefree black girl into a movement. Now in her collection of essays, Carefree Black Girls, a celebration of black women in popular culture, she's honoring the influential women who led us to this moment. What sparked this idea? I wanted to write a book that explored the fact that black women have contributed so much to the culture, yet we are so invisible, dismissed, and unacknowledged. This book is about black women and our accomplishments. It places us at the center of the culture and forces everyone else to meet us there. You write about women from Josephine Baker to Cardi B. How did you decide whom to include? It would have been so valuable for me growing up to see more complex, complicated women being celebrated. There was a sense that you had to exist in a very specific way in order to be protected and successful. Someone like Cardi tells you that there's the potential to be many things and still be valued. Josephine Baker, she's my freaking hero. To think that this Black queer woman from St. Louis in 1920s Paris was the it girl. We need to know her story. How can we all better embrace our carefreeness? Probably the most important thing for black girls to realize is that yes, there's beauty and joy, but there's pain too. You are allowed to be in pain, and you are allowed to express that pain. We must create more space for people to go through things. Turn on the Lights, said to be the first woman-owned and curated festival in recent years, the lights on the festival from musical prodigy Her returns to the Bay Area September 18th through 19th. Grooved to the sounds of favorite R&B and soul singers like Erykah Badu, Bryson Tiller, Ari Lennox, and Fushi at the Concord Pavilion. In between sets, you can chill in the Guitar Lounge, peruse the R&B Museum, and gaze at the live art installations. The next article is titled, A New Era, The Rich Elite, Heads of a Crime Family, Pop Stars, Puppies in L.A., you name it, black people are playing it on the screen this fall. Since the year began, a number of sitcoms and dramas with black leads have been announced and are set to air on both network TV and streaming platforms. Grand Crew on NBC, Queens, and a reimagining of The Wonder Years on ABC, Lee Daniels, Our kind of people on Fox, and Black Mafia Family, executive produced by Tasha Smith on Starz, are just a few of them. They join an extensive list of programs from 2021 that have found success in telling unique Black stories, such as Netflix's The Upshaws, Queen Latifah's The Equalizer, remake on CBS, Run the World on Starz, and them on Amazon Prime. The increase in diverse Black TV content is reminiscent of the golden age of the 90s, when shows led by Black stars were in abundance. I think that we are evolving and recognizing that everybody deserves a seat at the table. Everybody needs to be accepted for who they are, and everybody's story needs to be told, says actress Brianna White of the new wave of Black-led programs. She plays Lucille, matriarch of the Flynn Orries in Black Mafia Family. The series chronicles the real-life story of brothers Demetrius and Terry Flannery, who started the drug and money laundering organizations BMF. White, who has a familiar face on 90s sitcoms like Martin and Living Single, believes that current offerings bring more depth to the screen than the storytelling that marked her entrance into the industry. I think there's more acceptance of what paved the way for us to be able to do Black Mafia Family and all of these other shows, she reflects. There's more space to really be able to tell the truth. I don't think we were able to express honestly who we were back then. Truth is what the Wonder Years executive producer and showrunner Saladin Patterson is looking to display with his own take on the hit series. In his version, based on Patterson's own experiences, we meet the Williams family in 1960s Alabama. While still a young coming-of-age comedy, it also addresses challenges unique to the Black middle class as they attempt to achieve the American dream in a tumultuous time. Patterson says he hopes to shine a light on the parallels between the racial, political, and cultural turmoil that existed in the late 60s and the racial discord and partnership bickering over gender, class, and cultural issues that plagues America society today. In that way, the new Wonder Years will be less idyllic and more in touch with the world around us. Technology has also played a role in the expansion of Black narrative, says media strategist and culture critic April Rain. Streaming services have helped because, in a small way, they have democratized the process, she says. When I was growing up, it was ABC, CBS, NBC, and PBS. Now you have got hundreds of channels in addition to all of these streaming services. That provides a lot more opportunity for us to see ourselves. UCLA's Hollywood Diversity Report 2020, A Tale of Two Hollywoods, found that Black actors have reached proportional representation among lead actors in cable scripted shows. And based on the fact that Blacks make up 13% of the total U.S. population, they are overrepresented in cast diversity for broadcast and cable series. But increased visibility means nothing if it's just smoke and mirrors, Rain says. If the shows are just being pushed out without a lot of thought to who the showrunner is, what the writer's room looks like, and the topics that they will be broaching, then you're just putting Black people out there, but you're not providing them with any support, she points out. Quality also means intersectionality and inclusion.
Such is the goal of Onyx Collective, a new curated content brand at Disney, led by Freeform President Tara Duncan. We want to be the future of storytelling and set a new standard in the relationship between access, inclusion, and innovation, she said. Insecure writer and actress Natasha Rothwell and Judas and the Black Messiah producer Ryan Gogler have signed deals to create content under the brand, whose first official release was Questlove's documentary Summer of Soul, or When the Revolution Could Not Be Televised. The hope, Duncan says, is that from now we will have expanded our expectations of how we see and relate to the Black and people of color experience such that it is not a separate category, but simply entertaining, provocative, fun, quality storytelling for everyone. Actress Tia Mowry is excited about the changes that have ushered in the current boom. I have seen a positive evolution, says the star of Netflix's hit sitcom Family Reunion. With Sister Sister, we didn't have an all-Black writer staff, but as I moved on to The Game, I saw more of us. When I moved on to Netflix, it was like, wow, you really get to see the culture being shown in an authentic way, which makes it very relatable. It was great to see more women operating behind the scenes, including women directors, African American women directors, women writers, and women creators, she adds. The progress has been very rewarding to experience. There's another rather simple explanation for the breadth of Black stories we are seeing across TV right now. Duncan says we are at a place in our culture where the influence of Blackness and Black people is undeniably mainstream. As such, audiences are demanding programming that reflects the world around them, and networks are starting to listen because there's an untapped treasure trove of stories to tell, she adds. It's just good business. To that end, it's not enough for audiences to demand more shows without viewership. The series won't survive past one season. It is an imperative scenario for us to be open to shows as they come out. And then it's just as important that we support those shows that we do like, Rain says. If the ratings are anemic and people aren't watching, there are way too many other things that are waiting in the hopper to get their shot. Green Light. These shows, too, will soon be coming to a TV near you. Abbott Elementary, ABC. Quinta Brunson writes, stars in, and executive produces this comedy. Women of the Movement, ABC. Emmett Till's mother's lifelong quest for justice is the focus of this limited series. Grand Crew, NBC. The comedy follows the lives of young Black professionals in LA. Our Kind of People step inside the world of the Black upper class with this drama. The next article is titled Power, Black Educated and in Debt. Professional women share their strategies for conquering student loan obligations. College degrees will often come with a huge bill that can take decades to pay back. In fact, approximately 45 million people in the United States collectively hold a whopping $1.7 trillion in student loans. Black women graduate with the most debt. While the CARES Act has placed loan repayment on hold during the pandemic, conversations continue among the members of Congress and professional people, as well as President Joe Biden, on how to alleviate the financial burden through loan forgiveness and whether to give loan providers the go-ahead to resume billing in October or push it back until next March, as Senator Elizabeth Warren continues to press for reform of the existing system and Senator Chuck Schumer promotes hashtag cancel student debt. We introduce you to three savvy women who have already devised plans to pay down their debt and avoid loan default by relying on more than their salaries. Get the facts. Women owe the majority of the total student loan debt, almost $929 billion, and Black women carry about 20% more debt than white women. Researchers estimate that 1 year after graduation, white women owe $33,851 in undergraduate loans on average, while Black women owe an average of $41,466. Among those with graduate school debt, white women are estimated to owe $56,000 on average, while Black women owe closer to $75,000 on average. 84% of borrowers with federally backed debt would have it erased with a grant of $50,000. That number changes to 35% if only $10,000 in debt is forgiven. It is important to advocate for Pell Grant expansion so that low-income students can reduce the loan debt they would otherwise have to incur to complete a degree. Student Debt Crisis advocates for student loan reform and encourages borrowers to know their options. Do your research about repayment plans and loan forgiveness programs. Refinance your privately held loans for a lower interest rate if possible, and try to make bi-weekly or extra payments whenever you can, no matter what type of loan you have. The next article is titled, Your Dream Job, It's Out There. We all have an idea of our dream job. In fact, you can have more than one. These tips will help you consider what you're interested in, what keeps you engaged, and where your strengths lie. When you're empowered by knowing what you excel at, the sky's the limit. Explore your strengths. You might not know what you want in a career, but you definitely know what you're good at. A great way to hone in on your natural skills is by asking friends and family members what they rely on you for. Maybe you're their go-to for style advice, your organizational skills are unmatched, or you make the best cakes ever. Your strengths are like breadcrumbs. Follow them to potential careers. Be a problem solver. Even if you're dreaming about what you can do, think about how you can solve problems for others by using your skills. Whether you open a bakery, become a teacher, or join a band, your job will have a more defined purpose and you'll be the best person to provide solutions to the problems. Try it out. You wouldn't buy a new car without taking it for a test drive. So why would you start a new career you haven't tested out? If being a florist is your dream job, get a gig working part-time before opening your own store. Or if you want to be in marketing, seek out an internship. Professional tip, no matter what you're calling, networking through in-person chats and coffee dates with someone actively working in that field can be a good way to get questions answered and get your foot in the door. Scope out the workplaces. A good environment can make all the difference in a career. Are people competitive or collaborative? Does the organization make room for employees to advance? Companies have inclusive cultures and create opportunities for you to grow. You are able to pursue different career paths that best fit your passion and purpose.
Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Essence. We hope you enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I am Avra Lewis, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Essence is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919- 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.